Hare Krishna.
Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama.
albums of the Raj, good job, I haven't seen much. H.T. Booked me down to Sung Raj, the profile, die, I'm a Shabam, some of the Raj, good job. CC Mud Booked me down to Sash, the top course, the profile, go up, bring it in. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Tonight, we're going to continue our discussion from Saturday night about chanting the holy name of Krishna. Now, I wonder if everyone understands what causes us not to get spiritual experience when we chant the holy name. Now, the holy name, because it is non-different from Krishna, is so powerful that even getting near the holy name produces an effect. But sometimes devotees seem to get a little frustrated, thinking that, well, I've been chanting for a while, and I'm like, you know, a lightning bolt hasn't lit up the sky for me. I haven't, you know, experienced some kind of dramatic spiritual sensation. A lot of this unnecessary anxiety comes from not understanding how the holy name of the Lord operates. Devotees should be very eager to trade their chanting experiences and try to understand how it is that the holy name is affecting your life. You could be someone who's been chanting for many years. How many years have you been chanting?
22.
Okay. You could be someone who's chanting for, what, 1 month, 16 months? Okay. So naturally, whether it's 1 month or 22 years, you're going to wonder, well, I'm putting in the time, right? What will be the result? Will I suddenly start to float in the air? Will I manifest four arms? What's going to happen? What got you to start chanting? What did you think?
I don't know. I just knew I thought it'd be something.
What made you think it would be something? You read a lot of the books? And
I mean, I read other books, and then I wanted some process, and then it was like, here's a process. So
mm-hmm. And the persons you knew in Las Vegas who were fully practicing Krishna consciousness looked okay to you, right?
Yeah.
So you figured, hey, yeah. Process should work. So, but didn't you think, oh, this takes a long time to chant 16 rounds?
Yeah, but then you always read stuff, it's like, you know, I mean, I didn't know, but, you know, it's like once you know, if you chant the pure name once, you know, or, you know, and I know that's ridiculous.
Well, that's ridiculous.
Well, that I would be like, you know, yeah, right away.
But you never can tell. It does happen. That's why the documentary evidence is there in the scriptures, because it does happen. Krishna is independent. Krishna does what he likes. Just like at UNLV, some people get honorary degrees, right? Are you going to just sit around and do nothing and wait for your honorary degree, though?
No.
It does happen, though, right? Okay. Similarly, some people just touch their tongue to the holy name and everything happens. Krishna is independent, and also they can have happened to chant without any offense. It's possible. So what you're reading is not exaggeration. These things do happen. Just like some people at UNLV do get honorary degrees. What else? What were the impediments you had to go through when starting to chant 16 rounds? I mean, were there any, like, barriers?
Well, it took me forever to get to 16.
Forever meaning how long?
Maybe like a year or so. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was like, it was weird because a week before I started doing it, I was like struggling with eight. And then, but then these the original devotees that I met, they came through to Las Vegas and they stayed for about a week. And then right after they left, I was just like 16 rounds.
Yeah.
It was weird.
Weird.
Right, I mean, because, but no, the week before I was like breaking it up like 2-4-2, you know, and I was struggling and just wasn't.
Sounds like you experience the effect that the scriptures say you will experience when you associate with devotees. The whole process becomes easier in the association with devotees. That's what this whole community is about, association. In association of devotees who are sincere about executing Krishna consciousness is easier. And you'll find the opposite. When you, if you happen to associate with those who are not very strict or not very serious, then the whole process will become very cloudy and obscured. Everything depends on who you associate with. We should be practical and understand how much we are affected by who we associate with. Not that, well, you know what I know, and it doesn't matter who I talk to, or, you know, I'll just be the same, you know. Everyone's got a right to speak their mind, you know. I don't want to be like a cult member, you know, and watch who I talk to. I want to be free and just, you know, listen to everybody, you know. You have to understand there's such a thing as viruses. Just like everyone's scared now about the SARS virus. Naturally, you don't want to go near places that have it. No one wants to go to Hong Kong now. And anyone who has the virus, they're being restricted, quarantined. Certainly there are spiritual viruses. And we have to be careful. You don't want to associate with someone who has a contagious disease. Similarly, we don't want to associate with those who have an attitude that may negatively influence us. This is not being culty, it's just being practical. Understanding how material nature works. And you have to have some humble understanding of how vulnerable you are. In material life, people want to pretend they're strong, but actually they're so weak. Their opinions are not their own. In Krishna consciousness, we honestly admit our weakness, that we're so susceptible to who we associate with. We take on their mentalities. Therefore, a devotee is always trying for the best possible association. So you experience that. In the first canto of Bhagavatam, there's the example of Narada Muni. Have you read first canto of Bhagavatam?
I read the first part of it.
Yeah, you got to where he was saying that his mother was serving prasad to the traveling mendicants, the Bhaktivedantas, yeah. And he used to take some of their remnants, and he became attracted to the lifestyle of a transcendentalist just by that association. So you've gone through an authorized process. It's not weird. It's the way it works. You hang out with people who have tuberculosis or AIDS or SARS, you'll get it. You hang out with people who are intent about Krishna consciousness, you'll get it. Perfectly normal. So you just kind of one day decided, hey, I'm just going for 16. Yeah. And you did it. Yeah. You shocked yourself, huh?
Yeah.
What did you think afterwards? Wow.
I did more.
I did even more.
Yeah.
That's great. Now you said you took a year to chant. Come in. It took a year for you to chant 16. Maybe it would give you some further encouragement. Is there anyone else here who's just starting to chant or contemplating chanting the normal practice of the Hare Krishna mantra?
Cutting it up.
I've been doing a few here and there. Some days yes, some days no.
I'm trying to do some minimum per day. Mm-hmm. In a week I've tried to crack 16.
Mm-hmm. It's a bit up and down, though.
Yeah.
You're working, going to school. And, okay. Anyone else? Okay. I mean, I could help you and tell you, maybe it would encourage you to tell you how I started chanting Hare Krishna. Did I ever tell you?
No.
Who said? You know, someone had given me some beads. So, I was just laying in bed one morning at 7 o'clock, and the beads were next to my bed, so I just figured, ah, what the heck, I'll try one bead. So I chanted one bead, one mantra, and put the beads down, that's enough. Then the next day, it was Sunday morning, so I was also laying in bed at 7 o'clock. So I picked up the beads again and said, I'll try two beads, you know, two mantras. Did two mantras, and I put the beads aside. And then, I don't remember what happened. I mean, just like you say, it was kind of like mystical. Somehow or other, I started chanting. So much so that by the time I went to stay at the temple, I was chanting 13 rounds a day. Of course, you have to bear in mind that I had been reading Prabhupada's books 4 hours a day for 6 months before I touched any beads. So I kept reading for 6 months, 4 hours a day, that you're supposed to chant Hare Krishna, but I would never do it. But when I did, I guess, due to all that purification by Prabhupada's books, you know, I got into it. But I'm just telling you that so you can understand that, you know, it is possible to start chanting Hare Krishna even in circumstances where you never thought you would. I never thought I would. So certainly is all success for you. What were the impediments that were trying to discourage you?
Just being by myself and just not really, just you know, only having the books and not being able to have association to like reinforce it, I guess. And so I was just doing it in my mind as I was wandering. Is that what you're asking? Like, what caused me to not get that?
No, no. When you started on your final pursuit. I mean, was there any kind of things in your mind that were discouraging? Like, do you really want to do this, or is, you know?
Not really, not right away.
No ex-girlfriends turn up at the door, and sometimes Maya does that, you know. I guess you must have seen that sometimes, Matapa, in your service, that right when somebody gets close to Krishna consciousness, all of a sudden, you know, something comes along, and okay. Now, for the older devotees, like the 20-year veterans, 22? Okay. What is it that prevents us from tasting all that we want to taste when we're chanting? It is offenses. As you become an older devotee, you have more and more responsibility to chant with proper attitude. You can't get away with what a new devotee gets away with. For someone like Ben, it's glorious that he's, you know, chanting at least 16 rounds a day. But for the older devotees, that's not so glorious. You're supposed to do that, but the glorious thing is that you try to hear the holy name. Krishna's holding you more accountable because the relationship is more developed. Just like, okay, you have a newly married couple here, Jonathan and Julia. So, naturally, in the beginning phases of your relationship, you're very tolerant of each other, right? Like, if he makes a mistake, you know, I know you don't, but if he overlooks something, you just immediately, you know, you don't take it seriously, right? Oh, that's all right, dear, right? You say something like that. I understand. Don't worry. We'll work on it, right? Something like that. Right? You say something like that? Right. And it's the same with you, right? Yes. You just pretend nothing happened, right? But what happens if 10 years from now he makes the same mistake? What do you think your attitude's going to be? No way. You're going to just say, hey, You know, I told you 10 years ago, you know. I can't believe it. 10 years later, you're still doing the same thing. And you'll do the same thing.
Julie, that's right now.
We discussed this 10 years ago.
I mean, I really think that we should try to get over these things.
That's the way it is. You don't expect that after 10 years you're going to have to, you know, tolerate the things you tolerated when the relationship was new. You expect that there's some development in appreciation and understanding and sensitivity. So our chanting the holy name is the same. It's a relationship with Krishna. And Krishna doesn't expect that after 20, 15, 10 years of chanting, you're going to just go on blindly making the same offenses. He holds you accountable. So if you don't take your chanting more seriously as an older devotee, then there's no taste. And then you become frustrated and think the problem is with the chanting, not with you.
Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur makes this point in his commentary on Lord Chaitanya's Shikshastaka prayers.
Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur says that when you don't make the proper effort to chant without offense, then you'll start to doubt the potency of the holy name. You'll think, hey, I've been chanting and nothing great has happened. You don't realize that you haven't addressed the offenses. Now, how do we properly address the offenses in chanting? Sometimes it will seem hopeless. Oh, how will I ever chant with attention? My mind is always raging. Srila Prabhupada said a very interesting thing. A devotee asked him that, you know, when I chant, it's like two voices going on at the same time. My mind is going on, and there's the holy name. The Prabhupada replied in a very interesting way. He said, we don't mind a tug of war because eventually the Krishna sound will win. We're not discouraged by the tug of war between the mind and the holy name. Just keep chanting as best you can, and in time the holy name will prove itself to be more attractive in your mind. Now that's a great realization when you get that. Because I know at first it seems like your mind is just the main thing and the holy name is somewhere in the background. But if you just keep trying to chant carefully every day, you're going to notice that actually the holy name is starting to attract you. Whatever else is on your mind is just not very important. In other words, the holy name will win the tug of war. But you have to go at it day after day after day. Steady application of attention. Now, what is the attitude for rising above offenses to the holy name, Nama Parad? If you have an eagerness in your heart, Srila Bhaktivedanta Sarasvati Thakur says, if there's an eagerness in the heart and a very, how should I say, humble, repentant attitude in your heart when you chant, that is what burns away the offensive attitude. Just like Lord Chaitanya teaches us in the second verse of Shikshastra. Durdaivam idrasam ehajani na niraga. I am certainly so unfortunate. I have no attraction, no raga for the holy name. That's an attitude that burns away the offensive mentality. If you're always feeling how low I am, I cannot chant with full concentration. I long to chant with full concentration. But it's just not happening. That attitude is what protects you from offenses. That attitude burns away the offensive mentality. If you're always possessed with this mentality of, how can I chant better even though it seems I can't? What can I do? Oh, Krishna, please help me. That attitude will prevent offenses. Everything depends on our attitude in bhakti. But if you just mechanically chant every day, year after year, there'll be some progress, without a doubt. Without a doubt. But if you really want to get into
what Krishna consciousness is all about, you've got to put your heart into it. So I'm saying two things at once. If you just mechanically chant, there will be progress. And certainly devotees can rise from the mechanical stage to higher platforms. But there's a great risk if you maintain that mechanical following too long. There's a great risk that you may fall away. You may start doubting the process. Unless you're very duty conscious. And I just haven't seen too many people outside of India who are duty conscious. I just haven't seen it. Have you? It's like an unknown concept, isn't it? Well, I just want to know. Do I feel good right now? If I feel, if I feel good now, I'll do it. That's in regards to marriages or debts or obligations. How do I feel right now? Whereas India, where there's still some remnant of Vedic culture, people understand that an obligation is an obligation. So there is a chance that you can make it by mechanically chanting the holy name year after year and then rise to a higher platform, but it's dangerous, especially for people who are not trained in obligation. Naturally, you're going to keep demanding, where's the taste? Where's the taste? I'm not getting all the pleasure I read about in the books from chanting. And you start to doubt. If you had a background of duty consciousness, you would just chant year after year, even mechanically, because you have to. And then gradually you would rise to a higher level. But without duty consciousness, it's not going to happen. Therefore, I think it's best that those who are coming from a culture of no duty consciousness understand they're going to have to put their hearts into what they do about bhakti. They're going to have to invest their hearts. And that's something that people outside of India can do. They have no sense of duty, they have no sense of obligation, but they like to put their hearts into things. It just happens to be the wrong things all the time, but... right? They'll put their hearts into taking drugs. They'll put their hearts into so many passionate affairs. They'll put their hearts into sports or making money. Prabhupada noticed this during his Second Avenue days. He said that one thing about the LSD takers he appreciated was their willingness to venture into the unknown and just, you know, take leave of all traditional supports and just drop some pill and who knows what will happen. So he said, if they can do that for LSD, certainly they can do it for Krishna. Now, without denying that there is benefit by chanting mechanically, we are just exhorting you that the sooner you realize that you have to put your heart's affection to chanting, the more you'll be eligible for that taste you're looking for. So the chanting has to be done with an attitude of eagerness. Krishna, I'm so eager to taste your holy name, but I'm willing to go through day after day of trying to hear properly. When you have that appropriate heartfelt attitude, then the mentality of offensive chanting becomes destroyed. So this is what you should be hopeful about. Speaking mainly now for the older devotees. And then, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains in his commentary on Shikshastra that when you are properly situated in chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, you will be immune to the blazing fire of material existence even while being in the material world. You won't feel the flames of the Mahadavagni, the great forest fire of material existence. So these are the things that are in store for you. Please take it very seriously. Any questions? You have to decide for yourselves, how much do you really want to chant Hare Krishna? I notice, from what I can see, of those who are in the temple, the men anyway, in the morning,
I notice an increased attitude of dedication to the holy name. I cannot see anywhere else in the temple, but I see that the men are. I notice an increase. When there is an increase in attachment to the holy name, that means that the bhakti potency of the temple is increasing. Householders have to think how they can do that at home. It's nice if you have to chant at home to have a Tulsi Devi there and chant before Tulsi Devi. No one is exempt from the struggle to offer affectionate chanting to Krishna. No ashram is exempt. We've discussed this before. You should know that as soon as you exempt yourself from dedicated chanting, that you put your spiritual life on the side. And that should, you should feel that in the heart. Oh, what am I doing to myself? What am I doing to Krishna? When you have that kind of attitude in your heart, then you'll be protected from making offenses. And it's the offenses, the nama-aparadhas, that deprive us of getting the experience we want from chanting. Ultimately, what will chanting do? Bhakti Vinod Thakur explains in his commentary to the Shikshatsika prayers that ultimately the chanting of the holy name will cleanse away your gross and subtle bodies, and you'll be able to just see your original constitutional relationship with Krishna in the clarity of pure consciousness. That's what the holy name does. So we want to make progress towards that point. It is this effort to make progress towards this ultimate goal that shows who is a senior devotee, who's an older devotee. So I'd like that you all remember these things. Now, as for the beginning chanters, what's going to be the first things that you feel? Lord Chaitanya explains, Chaito Dharpana Marjana. You're going to feel the dust from the mirror of your mind being cleansed. What is the dust that's going to go? Your identification with the body. By chanting, you're going to perceive that it's not so impossible to think that you're not the body. Many people object when you explain to them you're not the body, you're spirit soul. They say, well, how can you act that way? But when you chant Hare Krishna, the first thing you realize is that it's possible to think of yourself as not being the body and act in this world. Have you noticed that yet? Yes, it'll come. That's the first stage. Then what's the next thing you'll notice? Lord Chaitanya himself explains. Bhava Mahadhavagni Nirvapnam. You'll notice that the fever, the fire of material existence goes down. You won't have so many hankerings, material desires. If you don't notice that, your friends will, mark my words. Have you had that experience yet?
Yeah.
Your friends kind of say, hey man, what's going on with you? You know, it's not the same anymore.
Disappeared almost.
Yeah. Yeah. It happened to me too when I first started chanting. My best friend. I never told him I was into Krishna consciousness. I never told him what I was doing. But one day he just kind of looked at me and said, hey man, what's come over you? You're just not the same anymore. I'm going to have to find a new, you know, a new running buddy. I mean, you're just, you know, what's happened? I just didn't say anything. I was just in New Zealand and there was one boy from the UK there. And he had met a Sankirtan devotee. And then the Sankirtan devotee had brought him to one of my programs. And so I got him to start chanting right away. And he just really took off into, he's chanting at least 16 rounds a day. In fact, on Gopurnima, he chanted 64. And he's only known about Krishna consciousness for a couple of months. So then it was time for him to go back to England. And on the way, he wanted to stop and see some old friends in New Zealand in some city. So I warned him, do you understand what you're going to look like going back, although it's only been 2 months? there's not going to be any problem. I mean, you know, they're my old friends. You know, they're open-minded. You know, they're into all kinds of spiritual things. You know, they'll just appreciate what I'm doing. I'm probably a lot of them will be interested. I said, well, maybe. Yeah, it's possible. But it's also possible that they won't. And, well, they're open-minded. They'll appreciate me and my decisions, and they'll for doing this, and, you know, it'll be all right. I'll just spend a few days with them, and, you know, and then I'll move on and get my flight back to UK. Yeah. And on the way to UK, I got to stop in Bangkok and meet my best friend from childhood. And, okay, so, well, let me know what happens. So, a week later, I got this message. I couldn't believe it. You were right. As soon as I arrived where my old friends were, they just immediately said to me, what's happened to you? They could immediately detect that something was really wrong. Or really right. They could detect that he just didn't have that materialistic punch anymore. He didn't have that enjoying spirit anymore. They can immediately detect that. It's like, you know, you go into a room that usually has a heater on, and the heater's not on. It's just ice cold in there. They can feel that. So they just immediately told him, what's come up over you? And he, of course, was enthusiastic. Well, you know, I'm chanting Hare Krishna. I really discovered Krishna consciousness. This is great. I know you guys will get into it because you're my friends. I'm cool, so you must be cool, too. And let's just all get into it together. Sometimes it happens. It does happen sometimes. But in this case, it didn't happen. They just kind of said, hey, you know, we don't know what you're into, and we're just, you know, not wanting to go that way, and, you know, we just really don't have much in common anymore. Maybe you better just pack your bags now. They told him that. You might as well just pack your bags now. Friends in the material world, you know. So he sent me a message back. He said, you were exactly right. He said, now I don't want to go to Bangkok and meet my best friend since childhood. And, you know, so he, you know, he just went to the Melbourne Temple in Australia, and staying there, and we'll decide what to do. So, people notice that you don't have that materialistic fever anymore. Are you ready for that?
Yeah,
someone. Someone. Why? Yeah. Why is it tough?
Still have attachments to some sporty sport.
Sports?
Yeah, I believe so.
Like what?
Snowboarding.
Snowboarding. Why are you looking back there?
Someone said it back
there. Bobby, that was Bobby. You were a snowboarder in, where's it, Wyoming?
No. I practice him a lot. So.
Oh, snowboarding. I mean, that's really like, it fulfills you. So I'm just asking.
Yeah, it seems like it.
When you snowboard, it's like your heart just pounds with ecstasy. Your hair stand on end, you just rejoice.
No.
You start prancing around in the snow. Oh, snowboarding. Oh, God.
No.
Start rolling on the ground, on the snow in ecstasy.
No, not quite.
And the amazing thing is, it doesn't cost you a cent, right?
Yeah.
Hmm?
Yeah, no, it's burning the hole in the pocket.
Where do you go for your snowboarding?
Wherever I can get my hands on it. Like,
you have to go to mountains in California, is that, or Nevada or Utah or something. Or? So you got to get there. How long does it take to get there?
Fly?
Drive. Okay. And what does it cost you to snowboard?
$50
for one day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Then you got to have the right clothes, right? Because there'll be girls watching.
I don't care about that, but yeah.
Huh?
I don't care about that, but yeah. I guess.
Yeah.
Keep yourself warm.
I mean, not only keep yourself warm, you have to look cool, right?
Not really. Okay, right.
You've never... when you snowboard, you just focus on the pure snowboarding.
No.
And you never meditate on the snow girls. Now, what do you think, if you invested some of that if you invested that same time you put into snowboarding into Krishna conscious activities, your life would really take off. Do you think you're going to be able to snowboard all your life?
I'm hoping.
You see any old men out there?
Not really.
What happens is your body breaks down. So why should you invest in a form of pleasure that you're not going to be able to do for a long time? And it costs money. What do you think you might like better about Krishna consciousness than snowboarding? Really? Really? Okay, why don't you like sponsor a feast for all the devotees instead of going snowboarding? That's a way to get over this foolish attachment.
That's possible. Yeah.
Just think of the thought. I'm providing a feast for all the devotees to take prasad, and I'll also take. What will beat that kind of thrill? What else do you like about Krishna consciousness? Anything else? Mm-hmm. You like to read the books?
I haven't been reading yet.
Oh, but these books you'll like.
Yeah. No, I've read
books. You'll definitely love to read these books, and you're going to love that others read these books. And if you can like snowboarding, you certainly will like to read Prabhupada's books. It shows you have a desire to like something. So if you just invest that liking capacity into the right thing, you're going to get the results. You just got to be practical about your pleasure.
Well, we chant all the way there. All the way back.
We? Who's the others?
A couple of other people who live on the street, who live in the community.
Mm-hmm. All right. I mean, I'm not saying you can't go snowboarding, but I am saying that there's a lot of better things you can do with your energy.
Yeah.
You understand? You agree, right?
Okay.
Ah.
You get hurt, you spend all the money.
Yeah. And I should tell you that in New York, there's devotees of different levels, you know. So you gotta, if you're serious, you look for those who are serious. Water seeks its own level here. Water seeks its own level here. If you seriously take shelter of the holy name, then everything will start to work for you. You think that's possible?
Full surrender.
Who said full surrender? I never even used that word. Well, I'm just talking about the minimum. The partial surrender, you know? Full surrender? Well, that sounds scary. I would never say anything like that. I mean, Krishna asked for it in Bhagavad Gita, but we know it's not possible, right? It is possible to fully surrender to snowboarding, right? But to Krishna, no. So please, try to improve your chances. And Ben, you please bond the way you're doing. Now, if you're really going to be smart, Ben, I'll tell you what you do. I don't usually tell people. For you, I'll tell you that. You start shoring up your life. You start adjusting your lifestyle so you can take more shelter of Krishna consciousness. And then the holy name will get sweeter and sweeter. Now's the time for lifestyle engineering. You yourself voluntarily start tinkering with your lifestyle to make it as productive as possible for chanting Hare Krishna. And then you'll see your taste increases. This is how to have fun. And it won't cost you anything. Remember that. The more greedy you become for Krishna consciousness, the more you make spiritual advancement. In the material world, greed is a bad thing. But in spirit life, it's good to be greedy for Krishna. Now, for the older devotees, you've got to face what you have to face squarely what may be obstructing your spiritual advancement. Meditate on it and feel in your heart, somehow or other, I've got to get over these offenses. Krishna, please help me. And the Lord is attracted by that attitude you feel in the heart. I'm so unfortunate. I can't chant with full concentration. Krishna, please help me. Don't kick me away. That attitude attracts Krishna. And it burns away your offensive mentality. All right. Any questions before we close? Yes.
How is chanting service to Krishna? If you offer service to somebody, it means mm-hmm. that he's deriving some pleasure.
Yes. Well, the example Prabhupada would always give is based on us and our existence as tiny parts of Krishna. I mean, ordinarily speaking, if someone is chanting your glories, you'll appreciate it. Like today someone was telling me, you know, how nice service Yuga Kishore was rendering. He was really saying it in dramatic terms. And so, you know, I was listening to him. Yeah, well, I hope it's true. But so then later I asked Yuga Kishore, well, what do you think, you know? What do you think about what he was saying? Like, let there be more of that. Yeah, not that he was, you know, being, you know, excessive about it, but at the same time, you know, he wasn't, like, repudiating or denying it. Right? So, we have that tendency because we're part of Krishna. Now, Krishna is the complete whole, the supreme absolute truth. Krishna, we can't glorify Krishna enough. Actually, our efforts are so puny. And certainly the Lord gets pleasure from it. To hear his holy name glorified, to hear his pastimes and qualities glorified, Krishna enjoys that. And he reciprocates with you from within your heart by cleansing the desire for material enjoyment from the heart of someone who's chanting his glories. So, Krishna is a supreme enjoyer. He likes it when you glorify him. But you might say, well, what kind of ego is that? He likes that we glorify him. The actual fact is you can't glorify Krishna enough. He's just tolerating our inabilities. So it's not that he has ego. He likes it when we glorify him. It's not possible to glorify Krishna even to the fraction of an extent that he's worthy of. We were speaking this morning in class how Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami explains that it's not possible to fully describe even one day's activities of Lord Chaitanya. So this is what we're dealing with, the unlimited ocean of bhakti. Okay? Yes.
Then we could say that it would be better to just compile some poetry or start describing Krishna slowly than just repeat the mantra.
As Nectar Devotion points out, it's very nice for devotees to repeat the prayers to Krishna which have been composed by the greatest devotees. Krishna likes that. You can learn the prayers by Queen Kunti. Those are Prabhupada's favorites. I know, but my favorite, when I was a new devotee, I learned a couple of prayers from Nectar Devotion. They were my favorites when I was 22. One was by Rupa Goswami. I know that, my dear Lord, I know that young boys are attracted to young girls, and young girls are attracted to young boys. I am praying to you, Krishna, that my mind will be attracted to you in the same spontaneous way. So Krishna likes it when you offer prayers like persons of the caliber of Rupa Goswami. There's another prayer, I can't remember who's it by, but it's in Nectar Devotion, where those persons who are rendering devotional service are first-class experts in self-interest. Because when I was young, I always prided myself on being expert in my own self-interest. So I learned that prayer. You can do things like that. Krishna likes it better when you recite the prayers composed by his greatest devotees. Alright. Okay. So, see everyone tomorrow. Thank you for your kind attention. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.